about covering all grades by 2029. Not necessarily 2022. It's by 2029. Slide number 22 there. And the grades that we've been referring to, except for 260-something schools which have both grade 1 and 2, which was in 2014, we are referring to grade 1. The compulsory implementation by 2018 is in grade 1, and progressively moving to other grades, and by 2029, reaching grade 12. That's what we are expecting to happen. That's what we've worked out. And in terms of the numbers that you are implementing or that are not implementing against what number, I would like to refer you to slide number 21 of the presentation, which will give you an overall target, which is the total number of schools that should be covered, the number of schools that are implementing by 2070, and the percentages. And then it gives you the number of schools by 2080. So it will give you that balance. The increase in time allocated for subjects, Dr. Maboya, Mr. Gavenda will respond to that. They've got specific information on it. Where does the authority lie? Well, the school governing body determines language policies. But they do that taking into account the policy from national and the policy from province. And it's not about offering a language as a subject. It's a language policy. In other words, whether it's Afrikaans, English, Setswana, Sesotho, or whatever, as the language of learning and teaching. And it's in the section that I referred to in the public schools. Are we on par with these three teachers? I think the audit is being conducted, and at the moment I'm not in a position to indicate the extent to which we'll be able to cover this at once. And I think once the final report also is delivered in December, it will advise accordingly to the minister. Why has the offering of history decreased? Is it because it's not important for studies at university? I've just said the lawyers that you have, the magistrates and judges who are delivering excellent judgments, that it's history. They got the skill from nowhere else but from history. So it's extremely important for even studies, for law and other faculties and so on. And even when you enroll at university, those are some of the subjects. It would be on exceptional basis that you find somebody moving from the sciences to do law. It's generally done by those who, even journalists, very good journalists, have been produced from, the skills that they got from history. The issue about decolonizing camps. Well, I'm not sure Mr. Gavenda is here coincidentally, which he quoted from the Mail and Guardian. But what I can say with absolute certainty, CAPS is viewed as a national curriculum statement as one of the best curricula in the world. Even Uman is referred to it as a world-class curriculum. Now, I don't understand how we can have a world-class curriculum which is still colonial in South Africa. What I can confirm is that we've not made enough offerings to adequately respond to the economic needs of the country. That's why I think the minister referred to the three-stream model, which is, it's done by Finland, it's done Germany, they talk about the Scandinavian countries, and Europe talked about the dual education system, vocational and academic. In South Africa, we are talking about the three-stream model, the academic, the technical, vocational, and the technical occupational. And those are the issues that we need to deal with. 60% of learners must give you vocational skills. Only 30 to 40% of learners must go to the academic stream and be pushed to go to university. So that's my comment on CAPS at the moment. Honorable Kosa Isitsonga, Minister, talked about that. He adequately covered that. Teacher demand and supply. In respect of IOL, I've commented on it. In respect of history, we'll await the final report and then we'll take it from there. Differences in the implementation by provinces, the minister indicated it was mainly around planning and so on. But more often than not, and I think Honorable Basson touched it, people would say we don't have money. Well, in Africans, we say health, but storm is not right, but promise. But it's not only that money fixes all problems. It's not true. Most of the things in South Africa require creativity. Creativity. And we've learned with the economic constraints that we have at the moment, where treasury tells us year in and year out, there is no money. We've learned to be creative. And the decision taken by CEF, as the minister said, there is no money. But they've agreed that they're going to implement the strategy. The strategy is definitely going to be implemented. In some cases, they might have to forego of some of the old priorities and replace them with this, because it is now a priority for them, and now that they've agreed. Honorable Basson, I've responded to the issue of money. The problem is not always money. It's about doing things different in a different way. Yeah, absolutely. Workload, I've spoken about the workload. How are we going to measure the effectiveness? I've indicated that there will be formal assessment. The only thing is that the policy would not insist that it must form part of their promotion and progression. But you'll be able to measure the competency of learners through formal assessment tasks. And Honorable Olive, I just wanted to say, and Dr. Maboya and Mr. Gavenda will help me, you've got streams of social sciences, you've got streams of natural sciences, you've got streams of economic sciences, you've got streams of service subjects. And then mathematics is compulsory to all learners, in one form or the other. Other mathematics or mathematical. That's what we hope we have in our system. Apart from now the technical subjects that are there at the moment, and we are now even increasing the number of other subjects, which we call technical occupational, which is going to increase the number of subjects and options for learners. Honorable Machisi, the minister indicated that I'm sure you are sharing your experience and we appreciate it. In the past, if you could not do math, you ran to history. But now it's become more important than that, because at that time, there was no form of mathematics. I think mathematical literacy was not there. So learners have learned that, you could do math and survive. But let me respond to your question. The growing subject at the moment is tourism. The fastest growing subject like never before in the system is tourism, which is excellent. When you experience economic depression in the world, tourism seems to be the only means, because tourism works domestically and internationally. People will always want to go out, something. So tourism is the fastest growing subject. Of course, hospitality and others are growing, but tourism is the fastest growing subject. What are the hurdles per province? I think the minister just indicated what were the hurdles. But we've overcome those hurdles poor planning, inability to really commit on a credible plan and so on. And we believe with the contrast that has been done. The grades where IOL is offered, as indicated, for 2014 it was grade 1 and 2. And what we are insisting on by 2018 is grade 1. And then from there, grade 2, grade 3, and move up to grade 2. The responsibilities of provinces, Honorable Matisse, I want to draw your attention to slide 24 up to slide 27. We start to delineate specifically on responsibilities of PDPs, specific activities, and then we move to provincial education departments. Slide 24 up to slide 27. How many teachers have been trained? The previous reports, I remember, they did cover orientation and so on. But I'm sure if we don't have that information, we could make it available, especially for IOL. Honorable Gina, Minister covered the mood of the CEM of the 18th. So the Minister is best placed to really address that question. Even lack of willingness, the minister also addressed resources as part of the responsibilities of DBE. For instance, we are saying DBE will have to cover part of LTSF and digital materials. And many of those materials are actually available. And then the rest will have to be done by the province. Actually, the issue of itinerant teachers, we've been using them before. And when people were struggling about the implementation of the strategy, we said, go back, check whether the arrangement of the itinerant teachers cannot work yet. And it seems to have worked for the provinces that have made good progress. I'm going to request Dr. Maboya and Mr. Govender just to cover this.
Thanks, Chair. Dishi and the minister have already covered a lot of questions. So I think ours will just be maybe around the specifics with regard to time allocation. So we moved from the principle that we are not going to increase the teaching time. So that with the inclusion of IOL, then you just have to accommodate. I know that, for instance, in the foundation phase, it would be 1 hour per week that is allocated for IOL. So we just accommodate it within the available time allocation. But I also wanted to touch on the issue of funding. To say that with the resources that we need for the implementation of IOL, the main cost drivers there would be LTSM as well as provision of teachers. But with LTSM, I can assure members that we do have funding for that. We do provide schools. In fact, we are ready to roll out what you call IOL toolkit as well as the workbooks for IOL. But what we are also going to do,
remember, say what is IOL
We also currently digitizing the workbooks for IOL. Because I think Tishi has already indicated that we are going to leverage ICTs. So we are going to use a number of platforms to ensure that both teachers and learners are resourced as they should. With regard to the provision of teachers, we have already indicated that we have learned some lessons from provinces that have already made some plans. So those lessons will then inform us going forward as to what innovative ways are we going to use. One of the things that we are going to do to increase teacher capacity is to say for foundation training, now that in foundation training we are talking about class teaching. So all foundation training teachers will therefore have to be trained in IELTS. That's one of the things that we'll be doing. So that if you're in charge of these kids, then you're in charge for all the subjects that they are offering. So going through the other phases where there is specialization, then it means even teachers in those phases will then have to be trained. But basically, we'll be using ICT platforms also to continually capacitate teachers. And with regard to history, why the decline, there are various reasons. Some of them have been advanced. But one of the reasons is that when in the past we thought history was easy, that is no longer the case because we have stepped up even the standards in all our subjects, including the cognitive level. Now, with history being a highly content subject, you would also have to be, in terms of language, you have to be quite fluent in terms of language usage so that you can be able to write the essays as expected. So history is no longer an easy-to-pass subject. In fact, in all our subjects, we no longer have such a huge subject. Math has also become a very difficult subject now.
But excellent grades, what used to be kind of
grades? No. Math is mathematics for social use.
Mm-hmm.
Calculate the high pitches to manage your finances. In fact, the Vice Chancellor of Rhodes recommended that it should be offered to all learners, including those who do mathematics. So some of them would not be able to work out the calculations that are found in the grid.
Right. The last one that I wanted to touch on is the issue of skills, the teaching of skills, vis-a-vis the teaching of history. Maybe not even history in other subjects. Maybe it's also important to mention that with the fourth industrial revolution, the skills that are needed, those will be integrated into the teaching of all the subjects. Not necessarily mathematics only or science, all the subjects will have to take care of those skills that are needed, including even your soft skills. Now you would have subjects such as history, where some of the skills, soft skills, are embedded. A skill such as logical reasoning is already embedded in history. Skills such as, you know, your the writing, communication skills are also embedded in the teaching of history. So I just wanted to allay Honorable Majeke's fears that that will be taken into consideration. Thank you.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'm feeling adequately covered by the responses that have been given prior to this. I just want to add one thing to the issue of IOL. There have been several questions and comments that have been made which seek to ask the department, so what makes you so convinced that you're going to be able to proceed with this? So I want to actually refer us to slide 23, because at the time of the presentation of this PowerPoint to the committee, the slide is saying the DB is developing a revised sector plan. I want to confirm that since the decision taken by the Council of Education Ministers on the 18th, we've not had the luxury of time, Honorable Chair. So we've had to fast-track the development of the revised sector plan that has been completed. What I want to emphasize, arising out of the IOL sector plan, is that provinces have been requested to develop a full implementation plan by the 31st of July, and that is part of on slide 26. So one of the very key indicators to us in the sector of our state of readiness from a planning point of view will be as early as the 31st of July. And then we're going to be able to track province by province in respect of how we're going to unfold the whole implementation for January. That is what I want to say about IO. And then in respect of history, Honorable Chair, and in response, partly covered by the Director General, in respect of the issue of colonization and decolonization, over the last many months, the issue of colonization and decolonization has occupied the public space to a very large extent. As the Department of Education, we have been required to also respond to oral questions as well as written questions, specific questions, and we have done so with regards to the issue of colonization and decolonization. I think the point that we are wanting to emphasize as we deal with ongoing critique of our curriculum is that as a sector, we have reached the conclusion that the current caps that we have, as DG has articulated, is the strongest curriculum that we have to date in democratic South Africa. Notwithstanding that, we have acknowledged that there are certain implementation challenges that require strengthening. One of the strengthenings in respect of history will come via the content proposal recommendations made by the ministerial task team, which also will then speak to how we will want to further strengthen the curriculum as we move forward. And finally, Chair, in respect of curriculum construction and also in respect of history, we come from an era where there's been a dominant colonial mindset, a colonial mindset that was then reinforced by apartheid ideology. And then we come to a democratic area, the era, where our constitution and the values of the constitution is what is going to be the overriding guidelines for us as we move towards the strengthening of the curriculum. And if there are any traces that we might consider of colonialism or discrimination or subjugation arising out of previous dispensations, then we still have an opportunity to plug those gaps and to strengthen the curriculum.
Thank you very much, Minister DG. As you have said, this is a period of thought, still looking forward for the full implementation of both the topics that we have discussed today and with the timelines that you have taken in the members. We are going to be making a follow-up in the next day. But at the end of the day, we are saying we'll always make sure and make a follow-up to see on the department to make sure that we communicate with them, refer them to be the full and responsible country that will contribute into the economy of our country. And with all these initiatives and the new things that we are introducing, the regional model, the regional state, we want to see what will be happening come 2018 January, because we fully understand it's one of the things that we to get history as we are talking about this instrumental introduction of languages, the whole issue of ECAPs, we are very much interested. At the end of the day, that is where we believe in education in our schools. When we talk of social cohesion, we talk of national identity, that is where we need to groom these learners, these future citizens of our country as responsible as they can. We always acknowledge the very important role that this department is playing and a very critical contribution that this portfolio committee is always playing to assist and to make sure that the department implements the way that it is expected to do. That is why even now on the following item that is going to come, it will be expecting again the Minister Honourable to respond to some of the things that have been raised to here, just like the issue of jobs for cash, of which we know very well that it has the potential of even bending some of the things that are continuing in the Department of Education, where our minister will be given a chance even to talk to the recommendations that are there. We are very much interested, Minister, to know how we are going to be actioning
about any changes that have been made in the report, and also means that you know very well, as basic education, the issue of protest that has got a potential, the potential of affecting what is happening in the Department of Basic Education. They were talking of a lot of areas within the country, the one in Bushwaka Ridge, Northwest, and so forth, of which will allow you to talk to those issues so that we engage you to say, even moving forward, how are we assisting those learners that have been disturbed and affected by all those protests, and what are the plans that you are coming up with that we need to assist? And so then we'll just be giving even extra time for us as honorable members to engage with you on some of the things that we pick up in our constituencies, just to clear up that. And as we even go out for others and go to our constituencies, there's a lot of information that we need from you that is going to assist us. So, honorable members, I think we can now allow the minister to talk to those issues. I know even as we continue to engage, there will be lots that will be coming up in our engagement with the minister. But with the questions that have been put forth to the minister, the two questions that I've spoken to the task team on job location, also the protests, and what is the problem that we've been having in place to mitigate and also assist those demands, I think let us allow the minister to lead us on this action, but not close it down for any member. If ever you still have another person to go to the minister, we can tell you that, because it's just the discussion that we're taking forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I'll ask the DG to lead on both topics, and yeah, just emphasize that both areas are work in progress, especially on the protest. But nationally, we support provinces, we just use the process of provinces, but mainly on how to support learners after those protests. It's mainly led by provinces, but we give you progress support as to what different provinces have been doing in relation to the challenge that was faced. So we hold them in a support capacity more than taking the initiative ourselves. But let me leave the DG to present with a point where we have questions.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, and honorable minister, we have not shared anything, Chair, but I'm sure if the minister allows, the notes from which I'm going to be speaking from, we could also share that after this meeting. But I'm just going to speak to them quickly in the interest of time. Chair, you'll recall that the last report that we presented to your honorable committee was on the 29th of November 2016. We are now back here and giving an update of that report. And in that report, we had cases divided into two. The 81 cases were what we refer to as constituting phase one of the investigation of the job for sales or job for cash, which initiated the investigation of the ministerial task team led by Dr. Kavoni. So I'll give a progress report on that. And you'll also recall that there were general findings and recommendations that relate to procedures, possible changes to legislation, even intimating possible changes to the constitution. An example that principals must have a different, they must have different labor associations as compared to the rest of the other employees and so on. And we clearly indicated that it would require the amendment of the relevant section in the constitution to allow for that. Briefly, Chair, in terms of phase one, the 81 cases, that is presented. I'm going to give information province by each province. Of the 81 cases in terms of the first phase, 19 were from KZN, and 5 were from Gauteng, and 18 were from the Northwest, 5 were from Mpumalanga, and 19 were from Limpopo, and 15 were from the Eastern Cape. You would recall that the report had identified 6 out of 9 provinces that had this phenomenon. If it's fine, Chair, if you want me to repeat, I could do that, just for members to check the correctness. And I said out of the 81, 19 were from KZN, 5 from Gauteng, 18 Northwest, 5 from Mpumalanga, 19 Limpopo, 15 Eastern Cape. And the progress is as follows. Out of the 19 cases from KZN, 15 cases have been handled and have been closed. In other words, investigations were done to check the veracity of the information that was available. Either disciplinary action would have been taken, or in some of the cases, in fact, in many of the cases, the department could not pursue the people who were alleged to have been involved, either because of lack of information to do that, or people who are prepared to come and testify and give more information. So, which means that 6 cases are still being dealt with. 6. It wouldn't be 6, it would be 4. 4 cases are still being dealt with. I was checking whether my arithmetic is changing. Okay, 4 cases are still being dealt with. Well, in terms of Gauteng had 5 cases. Only 1 case has been successfully dealt with and has been closed. And 4 cases are still being dealt with. Northwest, of the 18 cases, 14 cases have been dealt with and finalized, and 4 cases are still being handled. Mpumalanga, of the 5 cases that were identified, 4 have been dealt with and closed, and 1 is still being handled by, still not finalized by the Provincial Education Department of Mpumalanga. Limpopo, of the 19 cases, 17 cases have been dealt with and are deemed to be closed, and 2 are still not finalized by the Limpopo Education Department. Eastern Cape, of the 15 cases that were identified with the Eastern Cape, 9 have been dealt with and closed, and 6 are still to be finalized by the Eastern Cape Department of Education. So then we have the second phase. The second phase has 39 cases. And the 39 cases, if you recall, came up in the course of the ministerial task team finalizing the report for the 81 cases. And people started coming up, calling, meeting with the team and giving them new or fresh cases, if you like. So we had given you a preliminary progress report on the 39 cases on the 29th of November last year, and we're giving you further progress report on the 39. Of the 39 cases, KZN had 5. No, sorry. KZN had 23, not 5, 23. Mpumalanga had 5. Eastern Cape 7. And Gauteng had 3. And Northern Cape, which was not part of the first phase, then had one case which was reported from the Northern Cape. Of the 23 cases from KZN, 18 have been investigated, dealt with, and deemed to be closed. 18. And 5 are still outstanding, are still to be dealt with. Mpumalanga, of the 5 cases which were reported, 4 have been investigated and dealt with, and 1 is still pending from Mpumalanga. Eastern Cape, of the 7 cases that were reported, 2 have been finalized, and 5 are still outstanding. Gauteng, of the 3 cases, new cases for Gauteng, 1 has been finalized and 2 are still outstanding. Northern Cape, as we know, only 1 case was reported, and that case has now been investigated and finalized. So if that is okay, I'm moving to the next area. That is the report on the job for sale, or job for cash.
Thank you, DG. Though, DG, I think one of the areas that the committee arranged in the number 29 of November, one of the things that we have managed to see, so that we don't see the repeat of such. It should be very proper, DG, if we can just indicate even to the committee when we talk of the finalization of the investigation and the closure of the case, as to say, how did it happen? We had instances where you find the principal colluding with the SDG, you know. How were these cases concluded? What was the outcome? What were the outcomes of the investigations? In no way, we always say, yes, we don't want to, we're not for punitive measures that much, but more of developmental. But that is what exactly we want to see. Sometimes you need to, the consequences, the person needs to, you know, to face the consequences as they are. That would be of very much of interest as to us, as to say, when such employees have been found to have committed such, what happened to them? What measures have been taken to them? We need to teach even. They must learn a lesson. These two should not see this thing repeating. Even if you need to develop them, what are the problems that are being faced for us to see that such employees who have committed such have been developed so that you don't see such things repeating itself. But if definitely the cases where they were at different levels, definitely there are those who even get in sort of the punishment. What is it that we have done to such cases? But we are very happy that most of them have been closed. But yeah, we need to hear what, how did you close them?
Chair, these are some of the questions which were asked in the last CEM, and we are reporting to the next CEM in July as well. We do have an update case by case, but as I have said, I could make that available to you. In some instances, money has even been recovered, where somebody was sitting at home and this matter was not reported, and people were made just to, you know, keep quiet about it and so on. That's part of the, you know, phase two cases and so on. So each and every case, there is an update which provides more details. There are instances where cases have been reported with the police, and the police finalize the case. In some instances, they will say there is no basis to continue with this matter, and then they will close the case. And there are instances, in the majority of instances where cases are still ongoing, the matter is in court. The criminal matter is proceeding in court. And we've got those cases, you know, each one of them that we presented to you listed, and I can provide that information to you. Going through each one of them, unless if you say to me, I must go through each one of them, which means that I'm going to keep you here for quite some time, which I can do.
Thanks, Chair. I assume you'll be able to, during the recess, let us have a copy of the report. And then just two questions. Please don't read the whole report. We don't need that now. But I just have two questions. How many cases are in court? And how many people have been dismissed? Is there anybody who's been dismissed because it was confirmed they were involved in some crime? Thank you, Chair.
Oh, you say again.
No. Sorry for that. I think the member was trying to open his children. Because if he was opening a bottle of champagne, but he's sort of.
Chair, I'm covered. Thank you.
Yeah.
But oh no, I'm not conscious.
I just want to find out that if the report is going to share with members or.
Yeah, definitely. That is what I wanted to say, Honorable Mathieu, that DG, looking at the length of the report, and as members would love to go through it, we'll plead with you that you share with us that report so that, because it's not, as we are saying, that the outstanding issues are still going to be engaging with you even further on this report. So it will be good if we get that report so that honorable members can go through it, and on another encounter it will be easier for us then to talk to the outstanding cases that you have just talked to.
The difficulty is that it was not clear. What usually happens is that you request us to come and present the progress report. The engagement was between the minister and the committee, and the extent of the engagement we could unfortunately not anticipate. Otherwise, if it was in a presentation form, we could have prepared a comprehensive presentation like we usually do. We did share a presentation, a report of this nature with you in the past. The minister says there is no reason why we shouldn't do it, and we'll definitely do it before the end of this week, so that when you go on research, you've got that report. You can call us again to come and meet you, because we have a CEM coming in July, which is going to have this report. But we'll share it with you before the end of this week. And I'm therefore then going to humbly request the legitimate and the spot on questions of honorable colleagues, then to wait for that report, because colleagues have been hard trying to put figures together. I'm very hesitant to give such information if it's not verified, and would rather leave it in the report and then we can provide it also as part of the report. As to how many have been and how many people have been dismissed and so on. And I think that's what we cover.
In my anticipation of engagement with the committee on this subject, I did expect the question that was raised, has it changed practice of the school situation? And because we are still, and for some of them are still bogged down by the technicalities of police investigations, for me, because it has taken a direction which I think it's legal and formal, that when we have a complaint, then we have to follow through with the police, with the investigator, so that process is not a problem. But overall, because my concern was also whether the investigation, the process has helped us to improve in terms of nipping the practice in the back, or has it helped us to improve the fact, because indeed, even if some cases are not prosecutable, because it's leading buyer and leading seller, and I think they have to protect each other because they would have all been caught up in a corrupt activity. So it's sometimes quite difficult to really prosecute the matters further, but what has been confirmed by the investigators, indeed the practice took place, which was my first concern, to say yes, indeed, there were malpractices in the sector around appointments, and not only around principals, also promotional forms, and just simply appointments that there were bullies in the sector. And I can say we have, the process has helped us check in raising awareness, because we're getting lots of, which helps us that we don't even get to that stage where we now have to investigate a case where communities are brave to raise and to communicate in time when there's going to be an illegal action. And so, I mean, I'll give an example. 2 weeks back, we were at a funeral in Limpopo. Two different committees came to me to say, we knew where you're going to come, because I told my sister-in-law's funeral. They knew I was going to come. So they did raise that we have programs at our schools. So what was encouraging to me is that committees themselves have become aware and brave to raise these matters, whereas I think in the past it would have been accepted that there are bullies in the sector and things go their way. And we are able to follow up, and that's not the only one. People, even if there's been a malpractice in any interview, they're able to communicate with our office to say, we think there's a problem here, and we're able to act in time before the problem manifests itself. So that's one advantage, that committees are aware that we are willing to deal with it. But it doesn't mean, the mere fact that they still report means it has not stopped. So there are still bullies in the sector, we still continue to take their chances. To bully people in terms of posts. I mean, the case that I was dealing with in Limpopo, fortunately, we were able to communicate to the head of department, get them to go in. Again, it were bullies from the district or from the second who wanted to bully the school, including the principal, in terms of the appointment of a deputy principal. So there were lots of shenanigans which were being done by the second manager who was in charge of the school. So the sad part is that from the fact that people are still reporting, it means we've not been able to eradicate the practice completely. But the encouraging part is that we are getting, people are now know that we have a process to deal with these matters, with the problems, with the commitment to get rid of the practice, they report and are able to deal with problems before they manifest themselves. So I thought I could share that with you to say there's the good and bad that we, and I think we still need to do more, because these cases are legal, they're technical, they have to go to court. And I think the message is not reaching. We've still not seen anybody going to court, whether it has to be investigated, it has to go to court, it has to go to the police. So they've not seen a sizable number of people going to prison for these activities or being expelled or fired. And I think that's why people still take their chances. So I thought I should share this with you.
Just to add on what the Minister has given an update on, the last Council of Education Ministers had directed me to meet with the National Commissioner for Police. We have been trying to secure an appointment with the National Commissioner for Police. We haven't been successful to raise the concern around turnaround time of these cases that are reported. But at least I've been able to meet with the, I was supposed to meet with the head of Hawks on Friday. On a very last minute, she was requested to go and attend to an urgent matter, but I met with her team, the new head of Hawks. And we have established a communication line to try and prioritize some of these cases so that they don't take too long to be resolved. Because as the Minister said, if punitive measures are not seen, it might also encourage other people who are involved in these nefarious activities to just continue to do that, because they don't see any punishment for those who are involved in this. So I've met with the Hawks team, and we have agreed on a process, and we are running it. They were very reluctant to give us a lot of information because they're saying it's very sensitive. Also, if you are doing the work that they are doing, giving too much information is detrimental to the work that they do.
Thank you very much, looking forward to getting the report and also the update after your July meeting with DFC, of which you should talk to some of these issues. Then, Dichi, can you get into the programs to assist the these learners that have been affected by the protest and all the developments that come out of the protest?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if you allow me, there was an issue about IQMS and QMS. I could give a brief update on that one. It's very short. You'd remember that we did report that other parties to the ELRC Education Labor Business Council, had signed the agreement on the QMS quality management system. And then SASU had not signed because it had linked it to 0.5%. 0.5 relates to salary negotiations which happened, but we also briefed the committee on that. And the outcomes of that was that SASU felt that they were shortchanged with about 0.5, and therefore they want to link this to, you know, making good on 0.5. Subsequent to that, the Council of Education Ministers approved the performance administrative measures, Honorable Olis, and the acronym for that is PAM, P-A-M, Personnel Administrative Measures. And this is a document containing conditions of service for employees, particularly educators in the system. So in that document, we now have job descriptions outlining the core duties and responsibilities of all school-based educators, which include school principals. Now, with that, you'll have a work plan. If you have a job description, you've got a work plan. That's a performance agreement in HR language. So we are saying, although the QMS has not been signed as yet, it's been overtaken by this development. We now have job descriptions, we've got a work plan, and provinces were training to prepare for implementation. And that's the development that I thought I need to bring you up to speed with. Which means that circuit managers and district officials will now have to ensure that these documents find expression in every school every teacher, every HOD, every school principal, and deputy principal. That is the development, and that's what PEM approved on the 18th of May, which has overtaken the other development. With regard to...
They haven't even opened the file. It has collected all the dust. The importance of them being able to utilize that document, the training thereof is very much important, so that at least even when you talk to those teachers as a department, you do your oversight, even ourselves, it's nice to talk to them, having an understanding of what is it that you have in your cupboard, what is entailed there, so that it does not collect dust as we usually see when you visit our school. I think that a very much important factor of it. Work on the amendment so that they can understand exactly what is entailed in those documents.
Chair will follow up and probably make the document also available to you. And then colleagues will collect information on training, also update you accordingly on that information on training. I do accept that in many instances when you operate at our level and your level, this is the information you are giving, but when you go down to really assess, you find that it does not always match with what has been reported. So we'll strengthen our monitoring as well. We'll keep monitoring as well. Chair, then the last one is around service delivery protests. And on this one also we'll provide a comprehensive report. The service delivery protest that we had spoken about, which we were supposed to give you an update on, our service delivery protest in the Limpopo, Bwani in particular, and Mpumalanga in Bushbuckridge, and Machidini, Northwest in Lichtenburg Colony, and Itusi. Those are the areas which were affected by service delivery protests, which were supposed to come and report to you about. There are comprehensive catch-up plans signed off by appropriate officials at the judicial level, which will also forward to you as evidence of the work that provinces are doing, including information on the refurbishment and rebuilding of schools that were destroyed on other ones. That information is also made it available to you.
Destroyed by teachers?
No, not by teachers, by community members, protesting community.
Also, I was just like there was a clarity on who, for instance, the one of Limpopo. I was under the impression that the department is the one that actually fixed the school in Limpopo, only to find that it was not the department. It was somebody that is a responsible, including national allotment. So I just also would like to have clarity on that.
Now, let me clarify that immediately. When, after the schools were destroyed, damaged in Bwani, the minister presented the matter to cabinet. And cabinet identified money, we have reported to the committee before about it, 177 million. The initial amount was bigger than that. Then cabinet said it is improbable that the province will be able to utilize that entire amount within that period, because it was towards the end of last year. We were effectively left with about 4 months. 4 or 5 months before the end of the financial year. And cabinet only approved 177 million. The 177 million is allocated to 10 schools. And those are schools that are under construction from the 177 million allocated by cabinet. There could be some of the schools where Good Samaritans like Lottery and others are contributing towards, but we can even give you the names of the schools that are benefiting from the 177 million. That information is there.
And Chair, to add on the province, that the money is allocated to the province, so we are supporting the province, but before they could start, we also insisted on them to also take your structural engineers to go and check, but they don't need to do the school that's renovated, or they don't renovate the school which is collapsed. So there was some professional work which had to be done in terms of auditing the very schools themselves, which really delayed in terms of getting your procurement process. Because we said there was a risk really of wasting that money. The schools were banned, were giving money, and said, don't move into building before you can give us a comprehensive report to say where you are making a case of rebuilding a school, what is the basis. But where we are renovating, how safe it is to renovate the school. The school that the member is speaking about, the Mafamadi school, it was done by a private, and that school was muddy, and it was quite easy for them. It was seriously bad. The entire school, I mean, that's the school we visited first at the school. So it was easy for them to, and they had space in the yard. So they left the old buildings and started building, and in a very short space of time, and just destroyed the entire structure. But in our cases, we said, well, the money is limited. And we begin to have problems also with other communities, like your what's this called here?
Malamulele.
With Malamulele also, there were schools that had been banned. And we had not done anything about it. And when the boarding schools, and when we were rebuilding the boarding schools, they made a representation to us to say, schools were banned in Malamulele, we never did anything about it. There were also issues of schools that were storm damaged. Communities also raised this. We've been sitting in storm damaged school for years, and we have said we don't have money. And suddenly people burn their schools, we are here rebuilding the schools. So the point I'm making, Chair, there was lots of political management we had to do also around with the province to say, unfortunately, the money has been allocated for one, but start doing work in Malamulele because these people are right. What happened in Malamulele, the same thing that happened in one. People in Malamulele burned their schools, people in Buwane, they burned their schools. And committees that are raising concerns to say, we've been sitting in storm damaged schools for years. No roof, nothing, we say you don't have money. And people then their schools are able to run to them and said to them, go and also deal with storm damaged schools. And again, as I say, remember, there was lots of delay so that we couldn't just aggressively move to say the money is for one, we're going to build it, but to really engage with communities and get the province to reprioritize. I'd only go back to them to say, yeah, it's true what you're saying, and these are the plans for you, but not from this money, because legally we couldn't use money allocated for one for storm damaged schools. So I said there were those delays, yes. But work is going underway. I think the province is working with DBSA because they had also that huge backlog themselves, and which is what Treasury was cabinet was worried about, to say the province on its own has not been performing very well on its own infrastructure budget. Now there's this new program. And that's why we advise them because we advise them to say DBSA has got capacity that it has built for your ASIDI schools in the Eastern Cape. Work with them so that you don't delay these emergency schools and try to sort out your capacity challenges, because there were capacity challenges in the province. authority also. But there was, so there were those, the member had written me a letter, and that's what I should just go to, details about what has been happening in the area. And again, remember, again, the shutdown came back in Rwanda. And we then advised the province to say, rather than take material, then proceed, why don't we wait and see what is happening there? And which is quite expensive, because I'm speaking to contractors who have people on the ground. But those were other dynamics which affected us also about one, when they really went back for another shutdown. Because you take your materials there, find them missing tomorrow. So you just said maybe they must slow down and rather do other projects which were not in Rwanda. Just to allow the shutdown to be held. Now that the shutdown is over, they're going back to work much more faster.
Maybe, DJ Minister, even on the updates that you have given us, yes, we had a presentation in this committee where we even given the names of the schools that were destroyed, that were affected. We do have that. But maybe as per, as for the progress report, we just need that information as to say these were the schools and this is what is happening in those schools. And it's really nice of it to hear that even the private sector is getting, is coming in to assist, which is something that we always appreciate and be thankful to the private sector just to make sure that they bring back the stability to our school. But that information, I think, it will be of critical importance that we get it as per the process on how the schools are being assisted.
Thank you, Chair. You know, when I went to those schools, some of the schools, of course, I didn't go to all of them. The state of the schools already before they were banned, the majority of them, they were really utter, you know, like the structures themselves were already falling apart before they were banned. And also, what was surprising is the fact that, like, you know, the minister sort of came up with a suggestion that they have to be refurbished. But already, they were in a bad state, minister. Those schools are already in a bad state. The ones that I saw, I'm not talking about those ones that I saw. There were five of them. And some of them, they're even mud schools. And then you say, like, how can we go and refurbish those kind of schools? And how would the 177 million? Be able to cater for that, because from my understanding, if you build a school like this one of Mohammadi, it was like about 80 million. That's what they spent for the school. That's what the contractor said to me. Oh, it could be more, or maybe less. But I spoke to a contractor, and he also even said, like, you know, it took him about 3 months to build the school. I know the DG said he disputed that information, but the principal has said that, and also. The contractor as well has said that. And that is also another issue to say, you know, with the ACD program, we haven't been able to achieve our targets. And yet, there are contractors. I'm not saying that, you know, we should look at this one, but there are contractors who are able to build school in a very short space of time. But then, you know, we are not seeing any progress in that. You know, the minister knows that we haven't been able to meet our target of the schools that are located. But my issue is the fact that, like, you know, those schools already, they were pretty much still updated the same way as that. Did you actually consider maybe try to lobby for more money just to have the schools maybe re? I know maybe there might not be money, but is there a way to say, instead of like refurbishing, it's going to cost a lot of money to refurbish? Is there a way that we can actually look at and maybe construct these schools and also use the amount of allocated for ACD because they're never used?
DG and the minister also went to respond to this question. If you can give us, as the minister said, even the engineers have been sent to these schools to evaluate as to say if this school should be refurbished or to be started afresh. Maybe just even to get, when are you expecting that full report before the engineer asked us to respond to the question that was addressed?
No, the member is very right. That's why when they spoke, because I had been also to the interior and saw a number of those schools. So when they said they went to refurbish, I said, no, we might be wasting time and money. So,
But we have to make a case in the tutorial why we want to rebuild schools, all of the schools. So we have to say, as we say, most of the schools in the city were in bad condition themselves, and therefore we recommend that the schools be rebuilt for completion. But I agree with you that most of the schools require just to be put down, yeah, so that the refurbishment proposal that came from the province, I thought it would be really a waste of every time, but that's what they had to do. They had schools that they said, these need to be refilled, these need to be refurbished, and as from the schools I've seen in that area, I'm not sure if it's much, if not more efficient to rebuild some of the schools, but also to rationalize some of the schools. But if you went to Macomad, for instance, just down the road, there's another high school, and I would say, build a bigger school. The distance between these schools, I mean, I could walk to the from that school to the other, so let's not rebuild the school. But then also involved negotiating with the other school to say, maybe migrate the kids here, let's have a proper school for all of the learners in that village. So also, those are some of the considerations where schools were. As I said, these are community schools, and schools that build themselves wherever they wanted. And we said it would make sense to rationalize some of the schools now that we're rebuilding them. My family, I mean, I went to more than twice to this area. If they said it, because, and that's like excluding earthworks, which takes lots of time as part of building. Because they have to do lots of earthwork, it's only in maintenance area, and more than 3 months, I went to the schools when we were busy earthwork, but I don't think that's too much of an issue. The fact of what, the correctness of what you're saying, it was done quickly. They did it during the holidays, and it was done, let's say, efficiently. And what I was told, also very cost effective. So the 80 million figure, I don't know if you need to. So the figure that, yeah, again, I really don't want to dispute the 80 million, but I'm surprised because the figure that, whereas when Lotto was coming to say, okay, it was cheaper, because 80 million is what our contractors tell us, which are complaining about. I was given a figure around 30 million, that's why it's even more than twice. But as I say, I really don't want to dispute it. And also don't want to dispute the fact that they took 3 months or not 3 months. They did definitely take a very short time. And that's why we're also very sometimes upset with provinces when we give them ACIDI schools. The agreement initially that ACIDI schools will take 9 months. But we're finding that provinces are our implementing agents. We find that sometimes they're unable to do it in a short space of time. And for different reasons. For instance, here in the Western Cape, we had a delay of more than a year. And not because of anything that the province has not done right, but the schools are very, I think, complicated. And there was a structural problem which forced us to get the contractor to undo a very major part of the school, and then we really bought lots of time in terms of litigation. We had to go to the Builders Council because the fault was quite expensive, and we just felt it would be unfair to get the department to bear the cost. But finally, because it was taking too long, we said, let's find money between ourselves and the province to continue the school once we're going to the litigation against the company. So sometimes we have those delays, but you're quite right. Disappointing in other areas where they are told that the school is going to happen, they are going to open it in May. I mean, I was told that we are going to open the 3 schools in Cape the 10th in May. It's July next week. So the school, so there are those very difficult situations. With ACIDI, remember, the ACIDI schools are conservative. So you can't take the money that has been approved for a certain school in the Eastern Cape and take it to elsewhere. It has to again go through a whole rigmarole of parliamentary process. Even in the Eastern Cape, I went to CPCP over the weekend. I mean, I was shocked, because I was still showing the pictures. I was shocked that there were still schools like those. I mean, I had to ask from the officials from your office to say, is this a school or is it an abandoned school? They said, no, we're here to read them. The kids came out of these mud structures. So the thickness of mud structures in the Eastern Cape
which were not reported to Treasury for assisting. And even if we can underspend on assisting, we will not be able to build them with this assisting 1 month because those schools have been gazetted, the names have been gazetted, so you can't shift the schools to say, ah, we're underspending, we're having delays, we're going to build the structure. So again, I think it's how Treasury protects money so that we don't use money in a way which perhaps are not regulated, but sometimes they actually mind the problem. In the Eastern Cape, when we went to PE, when there were lots of protests, we picked up that there were lots of asbestos schools, which were supposed to have been part of ACD1. They've not been reported. Gauteng is coming up fresh now to say we have asbestos plant school there and zinc schools. And even if we can underspend with this ACD, you can't use this money. We have to go and apply afresh from Treasury to say we want ACD2. And they have to approve through their processes to give us ACD2. So I'm giving this long explanation here, but to say we were unable to juggle funds around the system because of the legal constraints as well. But I agree with you that our service providers can do better. And I agree with you that I have said similar to the problem. Maybe it's an opportunity. But even those that are not seriously challenged, but at that you might as well just give them fresh start. Some of the schools, the problems of complex, not only the ceiling that has been banned, but you look at the state of the school itself, that's been that if you're going to do something, you might as well do it proper once and for all the people in the proper school. Because if you could save those blocks of classes, it would also have been ethically acceptable to have those different structures in the city, but you might as well just do the fresh talk.
Yeah, we know all of the minister. So one challenge that we're faced with is to get the proper information from the province. As they are saying, Minister, even without the Supreme Court, you go to a certain province, let me make an example, the last province we didn't take on scale. It was a little bit alarming to find a number of structures filled with asbestos, but on whatever report that you are getting, there is no such thing. So sometimes we really feel for the way that you have to operate if you have to rely on those reports sometimes that come from the provinces, so which are not the true reflection of the things that are happening. Same thing with the Eastern Cape. I wonder really what it is that can be done to get the real picture of what is taking place on the ground, because as we are saying, you find to learn to know these things when you happen to visit that province. So you cannot be expected to run around all of them, you know, for you to be able to pick up all those things. Same thing with the person who is in and whatever. So the issue of the report and what is really happening in our provinces on the ground is quite a challenge, of which we always run after you and make you to account on some of the things that really where the provinces have failed to furnish this level with the relevant and the correct information. It's quite a challenge that you are faced with in our system. Unfortunately, I'm not sure, but maybe it's one area where we just need to think, what is it that can be done to make sure that we get the we get the true reflection of what's happening down there, so that you don't catch them on the newspapers, on the media, on TV, because that is what we're dealing with almost every day. You see that you call the DG, you find that really you can't blame him that much. He did not know what is happening in that corner due to the nature of the reporting that you are having. But it's one way, it's one area that needs to be looked at closely, so that we can understand really what is it
that is happening in our system. Honourable Bishop. Thank you very much. I just want to add on to the correct reporting. The last protest action that took place in Torshaw recently was not service-related protest. It had to do with the moratorium on administrative staff. And I know it's a provincial NCO capacity thing, but I'm urging DBE to intervene. Because at the end of the day, our learners are the sufferers. Because there's no staff, our educators go on a slow strike. The kids come to school until 10 and then they go home. It's costing the parents extra because they have to come and sign in as a learner. And just to be sent home at 10 o'clock after receiving no education whatsoever. And it always happens in exam times. So if somebody with a bit of clout can speak to the Provincial Education Department and find out why, because this moratorium on admin positions have been ongoing since about 2002, and it's just not fair to our learners. So it's not always about service delivery. It could be something else, and in Bush, it's definitely about the moratorium on support staff. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to say something that I also observed with Mandy was the fact that the community was involved in building the school. And by actually having the community, they had they trained women to paint and you know, men around there to do plastering and also to build the building. It actually is one thing that maybe we can, I don't know if it's possible that department can actually adopt that to make sure that the community becomes involved when it comes to the building of the school, because they are also now responsible for maintaining the school. And by doing that, it gives them better responsibility for the school, and they will be the ones who will be protecting the school during safety delivery if they have that sense of ownership of the school. Because if they have taken part in building the school, eventually they feel like, you know, it's our school, then they have to protect it. Maybe something that we can actually maybe look at when we are rolling out the construction work for schools to say, can the community also be involved in building the school? I know it might be happening, but I think maybe something that we really have to emphasize on, because they have that responsibility and they feel like, you know, it's part of their school, so they will protect it during protest. Thank you, Honorable Mori.
Thank you very much. Before I get a comment on something on infrastructure, I want to add on what the Honorable Boshoff indicated on the issue of the Goslow. In fact, they called it a Goslow, where the teachers will have to not only to manage, it was the entire Malaga. Etlanzeni was also, and Hans Baroni was involved in the Goslow. Because the major issue is the general assistance and also the CIs and also they said even on acting allowances they were not people they can check on all that. But I want to suggest it's not possible, you know, people are like that. You go this side, you find a structure, beautiful. Another structure is beautiful, has been built. But you go to another one, it's also beautiful, not beautiful, it's not beautiful schools. But they are different in terms of planning, different in terms of planning. And if you check this one, it also takes time to do that particular planning. You see? And it also indicates to our department officials, DG, that sometimes you don't even know how much is to build a school. Because the one consultant will come with his own amount and it becomes expensive. It's possible to have one plan for a worst case scenario, schools, where there is mountainous, there's a surface, and you cost it. You have the plan. When you're going to build a school, it's possible that with that plan, then you can easily make monitoring. And you know when there are problems, how those problems will be dealt. Because many companies might be coming to build that one. But you might have an experience on asking to have an intervention. Not one school is taking 10 years, another one takes 5 years, another one takes 2 years to build. So it becomes a problem. Is it possible that you have got one plan, of a kind of a school? You know, when you go to other countries, you can say, oh, that is a school, because of the plan, which is why it's the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Well, we do have a common prototype plan, which all the 9 provinces could choose from in building schools. But some choose to embellish a little bit from the prototype plan, and others choose to come up with completely new plans. And some choose to even compete with others, and which involves money. But that is there. And the minister and the CM had requested infrastructure, including national treasure, to look at the cost of building a school, because it varies from one province to the other. Although you have the terrain being more or less the same, the cost of putting up a classroom varies from one province to the other. I mean, you'd expect in a province like maybe Gauteng, because of being Dolomitic and so on, to be one of those very expensive. If you compare with provinces that are not exposed to those conditions, you'd find that it's probably even more expensive than provinces like Gauteng, or more expensive than KZN, which is a mountainous area, and some of the Eastern Cape areas. So the minister issued a directive that we need to look at that. Treasury actually, I can't remember whether it was a gazette or the speech of the Minister of Finance, when it was Minister Godard, he had indicated that no school should be more than 30 million. But provinces are raising different reasons as to why, you know, some of the schools would be more than 30 million. Some of the reasons are that for the current government to bring infrastructure that is comparable with the infrastructure rolled out your former white areas before 1994, you'll have to put up structures that are very expensive, that are comparable to those structures, so that you also deal with the influx of people from, you know, townships and rural areas into your town and urban areas. So those are some of the explanations that people are advancing. The issue of the ghost law, because of the budget issue in Pumalang. Chair, you recall, I raised it more than twice in this committee. And I said when posts become vacant except for teaching posts, they are not filled in Pumalang. Number two, I said they don't have a budget for running costs. Part of the strike, Honorable Boshoff, was that teachers were saying subject advisors and all the foot soldiers who are supposed to go out and support them are unable to do so because there is no money. Chair, even in, I think it was the last meeting or the meeting before last, she said she had the MEC being interviewed on SAFM. I was also listening at that time when the MEC was responding to all these concerns. And she acknowledged. She acknowledged that there are problems your non-capital allocation, to some extent, non-personnel except for office space. And this issue has been raised with the MEC minister. The MEC indicated that, I'm not sure whether it was the last meeting or the meeting before the last CEF, she's indicated that the premier has intervened. The only difficulty is that the money wouldn't show now. It will only show after the budget adjustment process in November, December. But officials have now been instructed to go ahead and spend. They've been given paper budgets, which will show in November and December. But I can only really concur with that. Well, community involvement in the building of schools, I think that is applauded, Honorable Machel. I think Adopt a School and the Shanduka Foundation uses that approach as well. I didn't really say that you can't build a school in 3 months. I think I would have said that it depends on the size of the school. You can build a school in 6 months, an average school. You can build a few classes in 2 to 3 months, depending on the number. But I'm sure we'll have to... It's an average school. 12 classes is an average school. A big school is 24 classes upwards. If it was 12 classes were built in 3 months, something worth investigating. So it's an average school. Chair, those are the comments on this, but we'll keep pushing on Mpumalanga to make sure that things are good.
No, Chair, that's the issue that itself. And I did read when you were speaking about the incremental introduction of African Council, there are major budgetary challenges that the province has created for the department. And unfortunately, those protests helped the department, which has been raised on an ongoing basis to say the allocation and the cuts that they made are going to make the department unworkable. But we're reporting on the Mpumalanga in the bush where there was this road, so there were construction, a road protest, which had also disrupted schools much more seriously than even this one, because it's almost 3 weeks.
Two to 3 months.
Yeah, four schools were banned for 2 to 3 months, things were not happening, and that's why we had to send the team there. So there were also those service delivery issues. The one that I want to come to Member Mashika, is about using committees, because that's the model that we would have preferred through the Shanduka and the pilot that we got to start with the adopted schools. I think that we didn't get to say we really got into serious trouble. With COPA, it was a real big problem. Because the AG looks at whether it complies. That's why Bafomadi could do it the way they want to do it. It's their own money, private money. They don't go in public and tender. Because we tried, Shanduka does it. And when they build schools for us, because they use their money, the adopted school, they use that method. They've used it in my constituents, they use it everywhere else. And it does exactly the thing that we're saying. Offer skills, create jobs. Because they train people before they get into the service. We tried that in the three schools in KZN. The first advantage was that because it's a non-profit making a point, when we went out on tender, the quotation for those three schools was 85 million. When adopted schools came, it was another profit making body, it came to 50 something million. To convince the PFMA people to say, they don't have, we have all the things, to be DA5. So they have all these bigger instruments that you have to pass, but they have to be DI1. And those people don't need to be a category. But the law says to build a school for 30 million, you must be in this category. And for instance, we might find that this company that was building the school, perhaps it just could build us for the KDB4, but according to the law, we won't be able to use them. That is in the PFMA. So we had to go through a long, long process to convince them, to show them schools that adopted schools had built, SNK has built in bigger schools than the schools were asking them to. I reached a stage where I said, they might as well arrest me, go and build a school. We walked into the school, so that I was not following the procurement processes and other things. Finally, I really had to beg the Minister of Finance to say, but you're putting me in trouble. Here's the case. I don't know why you're refusing to give me, because they can give you permission. My understanding is that he said, go ahead. When we went to COPA, they wanted a letter. He said, I should go ahead. We were suing. So, and I agree with you that it's one thing we have to really make sure that Treasury appreciates, because then we were able to save more than 30 million. But we're able to involve communities, we're able to do the things by not following the PFMA rules. But I fully agree with you that there must be some flexibility. When I was at Mr. Kisiga, I was showing the vision equality shop, a
realized at the school, I said, you know, I can't walk away from the school situation. This is a disaster. But I know what it means at school. Because it's not in the provincial plans, it's not in a city plans. I can't wake up and say, just go and get adopted school to rebuild the school. It's going to be another rigmarole again around how we prioritize those schools as eliminated. I mean, it's a human. It's a civil travesty of justice when you see those two schools. But to take a decision, even as a minister, and say, we can't walk away from there. I can say it in to yourself, but I know I still have to follow the regulations. And I appreciate that because they also, you know, can't have stress funds when ministers make decisions as and when they feel. But there are those challenges. But that's not a sure.
Okay. If you finish with the presentation on all these promises, because I can see we want to wrap up now. Did you talk to them as well?
I did, in terms of the recovery plan.
In terms of the plan.
Yeah. Then the questions were around the refurbishment.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I want to sort of call it to say you didn't even answer in terms of recovery plan.
Yeah, favorite questions.
Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know much about, you know, the requirements for building, but as far as I can remember, I think CDDA if you are grade one, which is really like it's more of an entry level for builders. You know, you can be allowed to take part in construction of a school, but if you get, yes, I think you can, because then you can't, I understand that. But I'm saying if you come with the consortium or somebody who is subcontracting, so you subcontract and you're part of the consortium of somebody who's got even maybe grade 8. So maybe that is maybe a model that we can look at. Community maybe can form their own consortium with a grade 1 and have them trained, and then they can be part of that construction consortium. That maybe can be something that we can maybe look at. We shouldn't just say it's too tedious for us to get to do that, but it's something that we can really maybe consider to say, can we form a consortium of people with no skills, but they can be trained to at least a grade 1.
Just gone through a case study because it's an area of business competition. By the time you start to have here and forming consortium, you really are opening up yourself for litigation. We try creative things, for instance, around the use of consultants we were going to talk in the past few years. I'm saying it's not that we have not talked through about this, but there are also some legal concerns to say how far can you go in terms of allowing a fair competition with people who want also to access their business. So that communities themselves will have to go and sort themselves out, do consortiums. You can't be a player and a referee. So they have to, so that you create an environment for fair competition, even for companies that want to access their business. It's their right also, so that they're not locked out. What I'm saying, some of these things, unfortunately for us, we're constrained by the law as to how far you can go into certain things, especially where there's money involved, where there's fair competition in terms of accessing government business. But building schools is a business for companies, and it's all fair not to interfere in the space. Committees themselves, if they want to subcontract, it's what they do in any case. When we give a company from Devon a job, we say, don't bring people from Devon, use local people as a condition, but you can't even, so communities have to form themselves a consortium, but it's a state you can't go that far, and that would be really affecting the competition that other people who have worked hard in CDA want to fairly compete in.
Thank you, Lizzie. I know I'm not sure. My interest also would be on the recovery plan. We know that for an experience of huge money that needs to be available
like in Mpumalanga, for me, we ended up not even getting the food because the school bag was destroyed. What about the information? You know, in Burundi, we're happy to say that with SA Times, they could recover, you know, the whole information and so forth. The issue of LTSM, the information within the school, how is the situation in the school, and how are you, how is the department managing the whole situation? If you can give us a clear picture. Yes, I understand with the blame to say how they recover the and the after it.
Fortunately, in both Northwest and Mpumalanga, they haven't had the extent of the damage like it happened in Burundi, when the records were completely destroyed. The recovery plans which are here will provide details. First, in terms of time, there is an agreement which has commenced in terms of implementation of extra lessons in the morning, in the afternoon, and over the weekend. The honorable members who come from these areas will attest to extra lessons that are carried out primary and high schools in those schools. And that information is contained here. Time allocated for school has been increased from 7 hours to 9 hours to make up for the time losses. All of that information is contained here. During school holidays, the recent school holidays, those schools did not go for school, Leonard did not go for school holidays, did not post. Extra lessons and tuition was offered. And the intention is to continue up to the end of the year to ensure that there's full curriculum recovery in those schools. And this, the implementation of these recovery plans is also monitored from district level and provincial level. That information is also contained in here. And the last point, Chair, just to add on the point written by, I mean, raised by the Minister. At times, there's great value in instruments that are used to ensure that you allocate and disperse and utilize funds in government. But at times, I feel that we over-legislate. We are a developing state. We expect to run a system of a first world class. Country. When we are a third world country, a developing state, I do feel that sometimes, even with the PSMA, we become too stringent. Maybe we come from a history of abuse of resources, abuse of this. We write laws in such a way that we think that we make it difficult for people to steal, but we also make it difficult for people to employ flexibility and to work much quicker and much easier. One of the examples, Minister, is that generally in government, people who code the cheapest get the job. Now in Africa, we all know who code is difficult. It does not always work. And some of these people who code very low don't really have even the barest minimum of capacity to do the work. And that's why for a project of 9 months, they take 18 months. Because they really don't have that capacity. The last point that I want to make, from CIBD, I think CIBD 8, if I'm not mistaken, you need to have your team that you pay on a day-to-day basis, engineers. Now, to employ an engineer, it's a lot of money. So, effectively, we are saying that those people who could operate at the level of carrying out this big project, which requires CIBD 8, should be companies that are able to run on their own. And where small companies are going to come in, very small portions of the project, which are not going to take them anywhere. And my view is that we put too many stringent measures which will delay radical economic transformation. We must put in measures that are in keeping with the developmental state, which is pro those who are emerging, is pro those who are poor, but the measures that we put in place are those that favor the big five of this world in the construction and make it difficult for the emerging world.
Thank you, DG, and I hope and feel that in no way where our minister and the DG reported and saying, let us do away with PMA. It will be taken in the spirit of the discussions that you that you are engaging on. Honourable members, thank you very much for these discussions that we've had with the minister. I'm not closing up for anyone, as I've said, with the ones that you have forwarded to the minister. I think they have been well handled and they are going to be getting the documentation that is talking to what the minister is saying. Before we close, honourable members, the announcement that I was first is that this is the last day of this term. We'll be coming back in August. But when is the first? End of July, beginning of August. But what we have done, honourable members, is we have agreed on this, committee. Our researchers, together with the secretary, we have applied for the study tour, looking at the countries that we proposed, like South Korea, Finland, and South Korea was the one country that had a lot of things when we can go into a territory. An application has been provided to the House Chair. We're still waiting for the go ahead. We are giving that permission to do that because we are told that we must watch and for doing that around the beautiful app. So our application, the date is between the 29th of July to the 6th of August. We are waiting for that go ahead. That of which will be communicated during the forum to say out one day. If not, if we are not granted, so remember we have our oversight that then outstanding, which we have agreed upon that we'll be taking the Western Cape and the permit. So that will mean if we are granted the permission to go to South Korea, we'll be going there between the 29th and the 5th of August. If not, in that week we'll go to the do our oversight in the Western Cape. Then we have a week away. We won't have an oversight due to the Women's Day that is just in the middle of the week. Because that will mean we go and go to our constituency to join wait for our oversight. Then the following week, that is the 14th to the 18th. As I'm saying, it is linked to whether we're going to South Korea or not. Then it means on the 14th to the 18th, if we are granted to go to South Korea, then we'll be taking the Western Cape. But if not, then we'll be taking the first. So, so that is our program for oversight as we come back from our constituent period. So thank you very much, honourable members. We had a very nice a term with so many things that we have had, so many experiences, so many new members, because even the INP, I've been told that we have just received a new member now. Professor Mtumang has been moved from our committee. We will re-eliminate him too, but we will welcome our new member from the INP when we come back. The new member that has been sworn in, that was introduced to the chamber, has been allocated our committee. So hopefully we are going to have a genuine team too. So we will be joining us. We apologize for today. We'll be joining us next time.